Storick hardly says a word while Jim shows him around the ship. But Jim thinks he can detect a kind of gradual unfreezing as they meet more and more people who are friendly and happy to see the both of them. Everybody seems to have gotten the memo that Jim had wanted to call No Bugging... Everyone seems to have gotten the memo that Jim had wanted to call No Hugging the Baby Vulcan, but which Spock had given the boring title Vulcan Cultural Practices Review. There's no backslapping, handshaking, hugging, hair ruffling, or loud displays of emotion. Well, except for Scotty. But Jim knows that if he ever catches Scotty being low-key and calm, he'll know it's time to declare an immediate medical state of emergency, probably with a ship-wide quarantine to boot. As they're threading their way through the convoluted corridors of engineering, Storick looks at Jim out of the corner of his eye and asks, "Are you in a romantic relationship with Commander Spock?" Jim feels pretty stupid for not seeing that one coming, but he cheers right back up again when he imagines Spock's reaction if the Vulcan had been the one to field that question. "Nope," he replies easily. "Spock and I are both currently romantically unattached. We're just very good friends." Storick gives him a slightly suspicious look. "Vulcans do not have friends." "I have it on very good authority that they do," Jim argues, thinking of Ambassador Spock and his lifelong friendship, not just with his own universe's Kirk, but with his own universe's McCoy. Which breaks Jim's brain a little, honestly. "Friendship implies affection," Storick counters. "Vulcans do not feel affection." "Well, I guess you'd know," Jim says dubiously, trying some of that diplomacy stuff that Spock's always harping on. "But I've been in a mind meld with two different Vulcans. Actually, they're sort of the same Vulcan, but that's a different story. I guess I'd just say that sometimes it seems to me there's a difference between what they feel and what they'd show." Storick is silent for a moment as they pass industrious yeomen repairing some piping that Jim knows he's supposed to be able to recognize. "I cannot deny that Vulcans feel," Storick says, so quietly that Jim can barely hear him over the humming and throbbing of the Enterprise's inner workings. There's obviously a story there, but Jim knows better than to pry, especially so soon. He changes the subject instead. "So yeah, Spock and I are good friends, and when Spock told me he was going to be responsible for you, I decided to help him out. We're both here for you, for whatever you need, all right? As I told Commander Spock, I do not require adult supervision. I am quite mature enough to take responsibility for my own supervision." "Uh-huh," Jim says, amused. "And what did Spock say to that?" "I did not receive the impression that Commander Spock was completely convinced of the logic of my position. Storick admits, sounding somewhat disgruntled, and Jim can't help throwing his head back and laughing out loud. Storick doesn't look too disturbed. Why is the page not scrolling? Ah, here it is. "Welcome to my life, kid," Jim says. "Welcome to my life." Recording now. Go.
Captain Kirk had seemed quite relieved to discover a few days ago that Vulcan children slept only slightly less than the average human child. Spock had not understood his reaction at the time, but now, after having put Storick to bed and retreated to the captain's room, Spock reluctantly admits that he, too, is somewhat relieved. When Kirk removes a bottle of liquor from his lowest desk drawer, Spock cannot entirely fault the impulse, although, of course, his visible reaction is one of disapproval. When he catches sight of Spock's frown, the captain sighs.
"It's medicinal?"
he attempts, but when Spock's disapproval does not abate, he grudgingly puts the bottle back in the drawer. The captain's posture at the moment is even worse than his usual sprawl. Spock hypothesizes, however, that the cause is weariness rather than impertinence.
How did you guys get along while I was gone?
Kirk asks, toying with one of the many
Stylite
lying on his desk. Okay. Kirk asks, toying with one of the many styli lying around on his desk. As Spock is himself unsure of the true answer to that question, he takes a brief moment to deliberate before replying. While I would not characterize our interactions as pleasant, they were at least civil. Kirk winces.
That bad, huh?
It is logical that, in unfamiliar surroundings and uncertain circumstances, Storik should engage in self-protective behaviors. Spock replies, feeling oddly defensive. But Kirk just nods and says,
"Yeah, that's what I figured, too. He likes the ship, though, so that's something. And he handled meeting everybody pretty well. Didn't freak out or anything."
"He seemed to respond positively to you," Spock comments, careful to keep any trace of envy out of his voice.
"You think?"
Kirk seems amused.
"It looked to me more like he was just humoring the crazy person. We'll see."
"He is aware that I am not his father," Spock says, and Kirk's eyes widen, but he says nothing. "I had wondered if that might be the source of his wariness. If I may ask a personal query..."
"You don't have to keep asking permission for that, you know."
"Nevertheless, unless I am misinformed, I recall as a child you were placed under the care of a stepfather, an adult not related to you by blood. May I inquire as to whether you perhaps felt any hostility towards him as a substandard replacement for your true..."
"Fuck no!"
Kirk says, voice suddenly harsh.
"I mean, yeah, I hated the guy. But that was nothing like this. You got me? Nothing. You could never... Trust me on this."
"I see," says Spock, although he does not.
You think you've got all the teaching stuff worked out?"
Kirk says in a blatant attempt to change the subject, which Spock allows. "I believe so. Storik indicated the subjects in which he would require instruction, and it appears that we have sufficient volunteers in most areas, except perhaps languages." Kirk wisely does not comment on that last. "In biology, Storik will be tutored by Ensign Varma."
"Is it Ensign, maybe?"
"Ensign. In biology, Storik will be tutored by Ensign Varma."
"The girl who shot herself in the ass?"
"A valued member of my scientific staff," Spock finishes sharply, allowing himself the luxury of an irritated look. "Lieutenant Bro..." Kirk shakes his head and interrupts.
"Spock, you are the only person on this ship who calls Gala anything but Gala."
"My function on the Enterprise as a lone defender of a higher standard of professionalism has not escaped me, Captain," Spock observes dryly. "If I may continue..."
"Please."
"Lieutenant Bro will be Storik's instructor in mathematics and in xenology, should another suitable instructor not be found."
Sorry, there was like a skip in the audio in the middle of that sentence. Could you repeat it?
"Lieutenant Bro will be Storik's instructor in mathematics and in xenology."
It keeps doing it. The sound keeps cutting out for a split second.
Okay, I can do it again. "Lieutenant Bro will be Storik's instructor in mathematics and in xenology, should another suitable instructor not be found. In philosophy and ethics, Storik will receive instruction from Nurse Chapel."
Is it Nurse Chapel, maybe?
Chapel? I'm not sure. It's one or the other. Let's choose on one and go with that. We'll go with Chapel. "Storik will receive instruction from Nurse Chapel."
"I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, Spock. Really, I am, but... Chapel? Philosophy?"
Spock raises an eyebrow.
Bless you.
Spock raises an eyebrow. As you would know, Captain, if you had made a thorough review of your crew's personnel files as suggested by Starfleet directive.
I'm a terrible captain, blah blah blah. Can we cut to the chase, Spock?
Chase?
The point, Spock. Can we get to the point?
Spock pauses for the briefest section to enjoy the feeling of personal familiarity that comes from the resumption of the usual banter.
Could you read Spock pauses again?
Spock pauses for the brief section to enjoy the feeling of comfortable familiarity that comes from the resumption of their dual banter.
I am so sorry. Let me see if I can close a couple programs on my end and if that will help speed up. Or maybe we just need to hang up the Spock, this Skype call and reconnect and see if we can get a better connection.
Okay.
Okay, I'll call you right back. Hey, okay, I've closed everything except Skype and GarageBand. This is probably as good as it's going to get.
Okay,
so Spock pauses. I'm sorry.
Spock pauses for the briefest section to enjoy the feeling of comfortable familiarity that comes from the resumption of their usual banter. Before adopting her current profession, Nurse Chapel was originally training in the Academy's MD-PhD program to become a biomedical researcher. Her area of concentration was bioethics. Her thorough philosophical...
Could you start again from her area?
Yeah. Her area of concentration was bioethics. Her thorough philosophical background, combined with the practical knowledge of real-world applications of ethics gained in the field, makes her, in my opinion, an ideal instructor. Kirk seems suitably impressed. He whistles and gives Spock a look that the first officer believes he may accurately characterize as admiring.
Maybe you're right, Spock.
The captain says, shaking his head.
It sounds like those personnel files might be page turners after all.
Indeed, Spock replies. Mr. Sulu and Mr. Chekov have agreed to jointly conduct Storik's tutelage in physics, while Mr. Scott will instruct him in engineering.
Is that really a good idea?
Kirk asks, leaning back in his chair and giving Spock a dubious look.
Scotty's kind of enthusiastic. I don't want him to freak out the kid, you know?
Well, Spock is pleased to note that the captain has paid close attention to his briefings on Vulcan custom, and apparently taken it very much to heart. He is also rather insulted that Kirk does not believe him to have taken such factors into account. I consider exposure to a wide variety of life forms, often with wildly divergent customs and modes of behavior, be one of the primary benefits of raising Storik on the Enterprise rather than on New Vulcan. We cannot insulate Storik from every expression of diversity that he might encounter, nor would I want to. Kirk nods slowly.
I hadn't thought of it that... Okay, there is a screaming child right outside my window. Child, I hope you are not being murdered, but at this moment it would be rather convenient if you were, because then I might have silence soon. Okay. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I like it. I can see how maybe it'd do Storik some good to be around humans. And an Orion, for that matter.
I will tutor him myself in history and in chemistry temporarily until a permanent instructor can be found. On the subject of languages...
I didn't say anything.
Okay. On the subject of languages, I regret that I will likely have to arrange... piecemeal? I regret that I will likely have to arrange piecemeal instructions by recruiting individual crew members to teach their native languages. Lieutenant Breaux has volunteered to teach Orion. I am qualified to teach a number of languages, and I recall that you were a member of the Xenolinguistics extracurricular organization. The captain answers affirmatively and volunteers his service in Delton. And volunteers his services in Delton, Klingon, and Andorian. An unusual combination, Spock observes, and Kirk shrugs.
You know me, Spock. I've got the language most likely to get me laid, the language most likely to get me in a fight, and one I just picked because the professor said it was the hardest. I know a few others, but not well enough to teach them, probably.
Spock finds himself impressed and appalled in largely equal measure. Not an unusual response to James T. Kirk in his experience.
This stuff, classes and schedules and things you can arrange and evaluate, this is the easy stuff.
Kirk says more quietly.
You know that, right?
I do, Spock replies with equal gravity. But my education was a valuable outlet for me when I was Storik's age, an arena in which I could prove wrong those of my peers who expected me to fail because I was different. It is my wish to provide Storik with the opportunity for a similar outlet, should he desire one. The captain, Jim, Spock reminds himself, appears pensive. His eyes are looking away into the middle distance, and his face is angled such that the dim overhead light throws the line of his jaw into sharp relief. Attaching stark shadows to his neck, his left eye, his upper lip.
Well?
Jim says with a private irony.
At least it looks like we have a strategy. Important thing to have, a strategy. You think of him as a Vulcan kid, different from the other kids, who's just lost his mother. I think of him as a lonely orphan who doesn't have any place to go but here. That way, we've both deluded ourselves sufficiently that we think we know enough about this kid to raise him. It's a foolproof system, if you ask me. Whoa. Screaming murdered child. Sorry. Okay.
I actually heard it that time. It was loud enough
that
I heard him.
Wow. It's a foolproof system, if you ask me.
Spock is unsure whether to take this odd statement as a rebuke or not. I know that Storik is not my younger self, Spock begins, but Jim interrupts.
And he's sure as hell not a younger version of me. We're all agreed on that. But I do think it's good that we haven't forgotten yet what it was really like to be a kid. I think it'll help. Or at least...
Jim shrugs.
At least, like I said...
Jim shrugs.
Okay, sorry.
Jim shrugs.
At least, like I said, at least we'll be consistent. So that's something.
And it is on that not entirely reassuring note that Spock and Kirk retire to their separate beds.
Hey, Spock. Can I see you in the ready room for a moment? Can I see you in the ready room for a minute? Isn't that you, or...?
Yeah, I just heard you go, ah. I thought you messed up or something. Spock looks up from his console on the bridge to see Captain Kirk hovering beside the station, bouncing up and down in a manner that, in humans, seems to indicate either excitement or anxiety. Captain, you can see me for as many minutes as you wish here, on the bridge. I have no immediate plans to conduct research into a personal invisibility device. Kirk rolls his eyes.
Yeah, you're hilarious. Would you be so kind as to accompany me to the ready room for the purposes of a civil and cordial discussion between the two of us, Commander Spock?
He asks, with exaggerated formal diction. Most certainly, Captain. In the ready room, Kirk motions for Spock to be seated, then sits in a chair beside him, rather than behind the desk, which Spock has learned is a signal that their conversation will be personal, rather than strictly professional. Spock is unsurprised.
I gave Storik his first human skills lesson today.
I know. Kirk blows out a sigh, and Spock realizes that he has perhaps missed a social cue, that Kirk's statement was not merely a repetition of an obvious fact, but an attempt to ease into an awkward conversation topic. He attempts to remedy the mistake. How was it? The look Jim gives him is grateful, and Spock congratulates himself for the graceful correction of his misstep.
It was interesting. It was good. I learned a lot. Well, I learned some things.
Spock waits, and Jim slouches further into his chair.
He asked me to teach him hand to hand. Well, he was pretty oblique about it, but it was clear after a while that what he really wanted to know was how to defend himself from bullies.
Spock spares a moment on the illogical wish that he could be surprised by this, but his own Vulcan childhood is still too fresh in his memory.
He seemed ashamed of it,
Jim says, his tone troubled.
He didn't want to admit it, even though I didn't push him, and he didn't want to promise me that he'd come to one of us if somebody tried to bully him again.
I assume you procured such a promise anyway.
You bet your ass I did.
Jim's voice is rich with satisfaction.
He's a good student. Most beginners whine a lot about spending a whole hour learning to fall correctly, but he's a stubborn little guy. No complaints from him.
I am pleased to hear that.
Sorry, let me move here. Okay. Yeah.
Jim's focus has come to rest on Spock with unusual intensity. He says nothing further, but Spock has become attuned over the past several years, the kind of humming silence that falls when humans have something to say, but are not yet prepared to say it. Spock learned patience very early in life and exercises it now. It is not long before his patience is rewarded.
I think you should tell Starek about the bullies who picked on you when you were a kid,
Jim says, and Spock's immediate reaction is a rejection so instinctive and absolute that his face cannot help but reflect it.
I think you should tell him,
Jim insists. I do not feel that.
Absolute honesty, remember?
Jim's gaze is merciless. Spock pauses to collect his thoughts. Absolute honesty, even with each other. Quietly, he says, Stork has little reason to respect me, even as the situation currently stands. By blood, I am his inferior, and his mother, his only parental influence as far as I am aware, felt little but contempt for me. It is necessary for the functional operation of a parental relationship the child have respect for the adult caretaker. Therefore, it would be illogical for me to reveal any aspect of my past that would reduce Storik's already precarious respect for me. He becomes aware that Jim is staring at him. And is confused by the tangled mess of different emotions appear on the captain's face.
Is that apparent?
Yeah. And is confused by the tangled mess of different emotions apparent on the captain's face.
You are nobody's inferior,
says suddenly.
Sorry, the Jim cut out. Could you say that again?
Yeah. Jim says suddenly. His attempt to sound casual was extremely unconvincing. Spock is gratified by Jim's confidence, but says nothing.
I really think it would help Storik.
Spock listens closely for any note of pleading or cajoling.
Sorry, you went total robot there.
Okay.
So from Spock listens closely.
Spock listens closely for any note of pleading or cajoling, but Jim's voice is as steady as his gaze. In a way, he is behaving as a Vulcan would, stating his case simply and clearly, without resort to emotionalism or manipulation. It behooves Spock to respond in kind, with thoughtful deliberation. Ultimately, as they have both agreed, Storik's welfare is the overriding concern, with honesty closely following. Spock's unacceptable emotional response of fear and shame cannot be allowed to interfere with the pursuit of those values. I will speak with him when the opportunity arises. Soon, perhaps tonight.
Thanks, Spock.
Jim says, suddenly relaxing again, in the way he always is when he gets his way. No thanks are necessary, Spock replies smoothly, when an individual is merely doing his or her duty.
You know I don't believe that,
Kirk says, shaking his head at Spock, with a kind of exasperated fondness that always reminds Spock of his mother. It was one of her most common responses to his behavior and that of his father. Well, I am aware of your convictions on the matter, Spock counters. That does not mean that I consider your continuance in such a logic an inevitability.
Sorry.
Even humans can be persuaded of the error of the...
Sorry, you've gone all robot again.
Okay.
That does not mean...
That does not mean that I consider your continuance in such inevitability.
I'm so sorry, it's doing it again. It's Skype.
Okay, let me see which connection I'm set on. So, okay, I'm on the good connection.
And now you're perfectly fine, of course. It does not like the word illogic, I guess. It must be a Vulcan connection.
A Vulcan connection?
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean that I consider your continuance in such illogic an inevitability. Even humans can be persuaded of the error of their ways if sufficient effort is expended on... If sufficient effort is expended on the attempt.
Spock, Spock, Spock.
The captain says with mock sadness as they head back to the bridge.
When have I ever been persuaded of the error of my ways?
Spock is forced to acknowledge that he cannot immediately identify any such instances.
That's what I thought.
Jim says smugly, and returns his attention to ship's business. That evening, over private dinner in their quarters, Spock attempts to broach the subject with Storick. Captain Kirk is under the impression that on Vulcan you were the victim of physical abuse instigated by your peers. I do not know what their reason was for targeting you. I am certain that it is irrelevant.
Are you?
Storick asks, derailing Spock's planned statements. Yes. Spock says dismissively, eager to return to his intended topic.
That is convenient for you, then.
Storick says, a very cryptic pronouncement. Please clarify.
I merely intended to express that it is convenient for you to dismiss as irrelevant their reasoning, and thus, your own role in their actions. By discounting their motivation, you remove yourself from the discussion.
Storick takes an unconcerned sip of his soup, but his attempt at presenting a casual facade is as unconvincing to Spock as Kirk's own attempt had been earlier that day. I do not understand.
My tormentors fell into two camps.
Storick tells him evenly.
There were those who were cruel to me because they believed that you were my father, and therefore mocked my part-human heritage. My traitor father, who had betrayed us for Earth and its humans, and my mother, who could not get a true Vulcan to marry her, and was forced to lower herself to be the half-breed's abandoned whore.
Spock absorbs the word traitor and whore like closed fists against his ribs. He does not want to hear any more, but it is imperative that he do so, imperative that he knows.
And there were those who knew the truth, that you were not my father, and were cruel to me because I was Krenoth, ashamed to my lineage, because my mother was, once again, a whore. Because, fatherless, I belonged to no house, and would never be set among my ancestors when I died. Both your existence and your absence were fodder for their taunts. And my mother, too, endured such insults. And now she is dead. Please excuse me. I have a difficult physics problem to complete.
Storick says the last sentence with the same admirable emotionless effect as the rest. It takes Spock a brief moment to notice that Storick has risen from the table and is walking towards his room. Storick, please remain briefly. I would speak with you on...
I would prefer to return to my assignments.
Storick, with his back still to Spock, Storick says coldly,
my extrapolations of the likely course of this conversation, should it continue, do not contain anything of value to me. Please excuse me.
With hands kept steady, by force of will.
Sorry, you're going robot again.
Okay.
From with hands.
With hands kept steady, purely by will, the dishes from the table, retiring to his bedroom.
Yeah, and I just lost, like, 3 words of that sentence.
Hand helps speak for support.
And that's even worse. Okay. So tell me a story and I'll tell you when it's okay to go back to recording.
Okay. The hand upset Eve, but that clears the dishes from the table. This points to candles and takes to the room.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm losing more of this than I'm getting. So we might just have to wait a couple seconds.
Okay.
For the connection to clear up again.
We'll make sure I'm on the good connection. Oh, I wasn't on the good connection. Now I'm on the good connection.
It just keeps
going back and forth. So let's try now that I'm on the good. No, it's worth. Let me go and make it be on the good connection.
Okay.
I'm going to 2-wire 499.
You can tell it to forget that network.
Yeah, it's not finding the other network right now for some reason.
Huh.
Okay. With hands kept steady, purely by force of will, Spock clears the dishes from the table, retiring to his bedroom. Spock lights 2 candles and sinks on the floor in meditation posture. The familiar motions and scents restore some small measure of his calm, but they are not sufficient to enable him to actually attempt meditation tonight, a futile effort. My initial supposition was correct, Spock thinks. I am completely disastrously unqualified to be this child's parental figure. Every attempt that I have made to interact with him was... Tonight was an utter failure, and yet I cannot abandon him or return him.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You've been cutting out since every attempt.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost done with this section. Come on.
Yeah.
Make us good. Okay.
And now that my roommate has come in and she's talking on her phone. Let's see. Maybe she'll go into her room. Okay, I think you're good.
Every attempt that I have made to interact with him thus far has been unsatisfactory, and tonight was an utter failure. And yet, I cannot abandon him or return him to his tormentors on New Vulcan. Spock breathes deeply, inhaling the candle smoke, one of the few things that has remained constant on Vulcan, on Earth, and now on the Enterprise. The most logical course of action, he concludes, is to continue to carry out his paternal responsibilities as unobtrusively as possible, without attempting to develop an unnecessary emotional connection. There is no other tutor who can instruct him in Vulcan history, but it is past time that Spock enlisted an alternate chemistry tutor. And his attempt to draw Storik into the kind of rapport that Spock shares with his own father, tentative though it is, must be discontinued. Spock will be an impeccable Vulcan parent. No doubt that is what Storik has desired all along.
Okay, I do not think... When Jim has beta shift on the bridge, he has lunch with Storik in the mess hall. It's not like a requirement or anything. It's just something that they do because that's how it is. If Jim can't make it, he makes Sulu or Chekov meet Storik instead, so the kid gets at least some socialization time with his meal. If Storik can't make it, well, that's never happened before. So when Jim gets to the mess hall during Beta Shift's designated lunch period and doesn't see Storik there, he gets a little worried. Seeing a familiar head of curly red hair, he jogs over to a table full of engineering staff on their lunch break. It looks like the whole damn department is there, arguing, of course. For every two engineers you put in shouting distance of each other, you get at least one good argument, sometimes more. Gayla, Jim calls, and she looks up and smiles at him.
What can I do for you, Jim? I mean...
She bites her lip, and Jim tries really hard not to die a little inside. And Jim tries really hard not to die a little inside at the thought that he'll never hit that again.
What can I do for you, Captain?
Jim pulls his brain back online again. Have you seen Storik? We were supposed to have lunch like usual.
I saw him this morning for his xenology lesson, but I haven't seen him since.
Gayla says, frowning a little.
Is something wrong?
I don't think so. He's probably just doing homework. Too cool for his old man, you know. You know how it is. What's with the Army of Engineering staff? Scotty, farther down the table, grins widely and toasts Jim with a glass of something purple and glowing that Jim probably wouldn't touch this early in the day.
It's my birthday, Captain.
I'll be damned, Jim laughs. Happy birthday, Scotty. Looks like you've got a good celebration going on, that's for sure.
Join us, Captain. At least stay for the cake.
Gayla pleads.
I have read that the cake is traditionally the climactic event of human birthday celebration, and I wouldn't want you to miss it.
You can go ahead and get that one.
It has rum in it.
One of Scotty's deputies stage whispers to Jim.
Don't tell Captain Kirk.
Jim worries about Storik for a second, but honestly, the kid isn't much for company, and probably just decided it wasn't logical to humor the humans and their weird social behaviors anymore. Not that that gets him out of it. Jim is determined not to let the kid become a hermit, and they'll have words later tonight. But it's nothing to freak out about right now. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, Jim pronounces. Your secret is safe with me. Now, where's this cake? I absolutely haven't heard anything about.